What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. That is a live shot of the scene outside the New York Stock Exchange as restaurant chain Cava makes its market debut today.
Happy Cava Day.
Thank you. It's a potentially major test of the IPO market and obviously a very important day for that particular company. Nice little thing going on out there. You can't see it. A lot of plants, greenery. We're going to talk with the CEO later this hour.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber with Jim Cramer. We're live from Post 9 at the New York Stock Exchange. Carl has the morning off. Let's give you a look at futures as we get ready 30 minutes from now to begin the trading day. You can see we're going to have a lower open. And, of course, a lot of that may be a result of what we heard yesterday from Fed Chair Powell. And that is where our roadmap starts, with the Fed standing pat for now on interest rates, though it did signal that tightening could soon resume. From the Fed to the consumer, new data showing retail sales rose in May, and that was something of a surprise.
Yeah.
And as we mentioned, Cava going public today. It, you know, Jim and I have different views of how big a test it is for the IPO market, but we'll certainly discuss that. Brent Shulman is the CEO of what is a Mediterranean fast casual chain, and he's going to join us later right here at Post 9 to talk about this big day for his company. Let's start with the Fed. Paused rate hikes for the first time in 15 months, but Chair Powell not ruling out more rate increases before year end.
Nearly all committee participants expect that it will be appropriate to raise interest rates somewhat further by the end of the year. But at this meeting, considering how far and how fast we've moved, we judged it prudent to hold the target range steady to allow the committee to assess additional information and its implications for monetary policy.
All right. What do you think?
Well, I think a lot of people were trying to figure out whether we're going to have a soft landing or a hard landing. But yesterday we discovered there's a third choice, which is that the plane is still in the air and doesn't have any intention of landing. So how do you have a soft or hard landing? And the reason is because of housing. And housing's controlled by wages. I think if you go, you want to know the key to this? Go to the Home Depot conference call, the full day, the analyst day, and you will hear why they have to do it. Home Depot is saying, look, this is an incredibly inflationary time. There's inflation everywhere. Housing, by the way, $13 trillion in value has been created. Home prices are up 40% since 2019. Everything trickles down from housing, and housing, we're going to hear from Lennar. Same thing. It is where the epicenter of inflation is, and it's rippling throughout the economy.
You've been saying that for quite some time. That said, there's not that much action in housing in terms of people selling and people buying as a result of interest rates. I mean, if you have a good mortgage, for example, you are less likely to want to leave and have to assume a new mortgage at a much higher rate, aren't you?
Well, okay, so there are literally 50% of people don't even have a mortgage, okay? Of the other people who have mortgages, let me guess, 40% of owner-occupied homes have no mortgage.
Yeah.
80% of those with mortgages are locked in at 5% or lower. So you, if you look at that, you do the algebra calculation, obviously, then there's almost no one to sell.
Right. Why? I don't want to move because I can afford my monthly now and then may not be able to afford it.
Or, exactly.
Right. Well, and the person buying my home is not, it's just that same issue.
And you have 68 million consumers that have a lot more money than they did in 2019. That's the Bank of America consumer, Bank of America alone. And then here's some statistics that I got that I think are really indicative of where we are. Vacant apartments are now filled in 38 days. Last year, they were 32. There are 8 prospective renters for each unit, 10 from 11. But imagine what's going on here. These renters can't move up to new homes because there are so few new homes. We're building homes radically lower pace than we did last year at this time because the home builders listened to Powell and thought that maybe we were going to have a recession. and that you have what you really need are the student. This is a terrible scenario, but student loans have to come back to where you have to pay them. And people have to go back to live with their parents in order for this cycle to be broken. And I don't think, I think the cycles can be very hard to break.
All right, come back to the Fed for me, though. I mean, we've got any number of different opinions out there. Morgan Stanley would continue to think the Fed is done here.
How do they say that it's based on nothing?
Based on nothing. Maybe based on nothing. But there are those who believe, well, listen, obviously they're going to be data dependent. We'll see. And even though he's indicated that rates may stay where they are for another 2 years, right?
True. Now, autos, I have fresh auto information. The auto information is compiled once a month, and autos were up very big. Vehicles, and that's come down. Used cars and trucks are going to surprise you how much they've come down in the last 4 weeks. My information is fresher than their information.
Okay, so I feel like you're telling me different. You're saying, well, on the one thing, you always share about housing is so strong, and housing is strong, and housing is strong, and then you're giving me everything else that's not that strong.
Well, no, I think that's the conundrum that we're faced, which there's really only one thing that is really strong. But look, do you really think if you're Loretta Mester from the fourth fastest growing city in the country, Cleveland, do you really think that you can have home prices up 40% since 2019 and feel that we're not in an inflationary environment, especially with Lennar, which is being in the 10 o'clock hour? Lennar having unbelievable numbers, although some of their homes prices went down. David, I'm just pointing out that this is the metric that they're really upset about.
And Stuart Miller will join us in the 10 o'clock hour.
If you deal with Bank of America, now MasterCard, the MasterCard spending numbers, David,
yes,
are incredibly fast. Now, there's a note. Citi's got a negative catalyst in America's press. I don't know. All I can tell you is that MasterCard spend was off the charts, particularly for jewelry. Mother's Day was amazingly strong.
Gunlock yesterday joined Wattmer later in the day. Take a listen to what he had to say, of course. What do we used to call him? The bond king, I think, in his reaction. I want to get yours to his reaction
sure.
of the Powell presser.
I don't believe the Fed's going to raise rates again. I think Jay Powell has a really difficult job right now. Because as Steve is correctly pointing out, I think he realizes that we're at a turning point potentially on the inflation situation and on the economy, and yet there are people that are dedicated to these lagging indicators like unemployment, labor market, and certainly looking at core CPI, well, it lags. It just does.
Okay, about 30 years ago, there was a debate. I'm sorry, 1983. There was a debate about how to make it so that the CPI didn't look that high. So they took homes out of it. I mean, I wish I were joking about this. They took homes out of it, but they kept rents in. If you put homes into the CPI, is what I'm saying, is they're not going by.
Yeah.
They're not, because homes aren't in the CPI. I mean, that was sleight of hand to take homes out.
Yep.
But do you think a Loretta Mester, who happens to be incredibly rigorous, is sitting here saying, you know what, let's just asterisk this? Homes, David, 66% of the people in the country, it's a very important indicator, and homes are out of control. They can't build them fast enough. Lennar can't build them fast. Toll can't. KB Homes can't. So the supply of homes is very limited. Of new, used homes, supply very limited. Rental supply very limited. And we're supposed to say that we're in a non-inflationary environment. Ted Decker, the Home Depot call was chiller. And if the Fed listened to that, they would say, we are so not done. If Gundlach would listen to the Home Depot day, you would just say, holy cow, are we in a jam?
All right. So how does it impact your view of the equity markets, if at all? Does it change anything that you had, your assumptions yesterday versus today?
Well, you know that there's a lot of people who are on the wrong side if you look at the long range. We're not going to be in a recession. That long range is signaling recession.
Yeah.
We're not going to be in a recession. Okay. We have a very strong economy. It's not like people, David, in 2008, where they're walking away from their homes and giving Washington Mutual the keys to it. Who's walking away from a home when you have no mortgage?
True.
Would that be stupid? I think it would be. Hey, I'm going to walk away from you have incredible wealth being built in your home even right now. That's another part of the Home Depot where they said, listen, it's not an expense to fix your house up. It's capital. You're capitalizing. Homes are the thing they're worried about, and wages control homes.
All right, let's move on to the IPO of the morning. Can we do that?
That's okay.
Because, we have a certain amount of time each block.
But I just gave you the key to this.
I heard you.
I know Cava better than anyone in America.
Oh, no, you don't. So why do you say things like that? Because I know Cava better than anyone in America. Why would you say something like that? Because I'm given to hyperbole.
Look at these are my Cava notes.
Oh, my God. He's got more pockets than a magician.
Okay, right. David, it's $22.
Hold on. Yes, 20. It's 22 bucks above the previous range. Actually, here are the numbers I shared on Twitter this morning. 30 times oversubscribed, 400 orders in the book.
30 times.
30 times.
You know what that says
top
to me?
20 accounts, long onlys mostly, getting 80% of the allocation.
This is going to be the most important IPO of the year.
But why? It's a restaurant chain.
Okay.
If you were saying Instacart is the most important IPO of the year, if you were saying that, I would believe you.
Okay.
Because that's technology-related in a way that this is not.
The question is this Sweetgreen, which is a bomb, or is this Chipotle? Now, David, same-store sales are, same 14%, okay? Accelerated to an incredible 28.4% in the first quarter of 2023. 28.4%. Comparison, Chipotle, I mean, it's kind of like Chipotle, except for Chipotle did not have that kind of growth when it started. So, I mean, you can make a comparison here. The average unit volume, David, is worth of $2.5 million. That's fantastic. But you say, Jim, are they making money? And the answer is no.
No, they're not making any money.
But, you know, if you look at EBITDA, your
$59 million
If you look at adjusted EBITDA, which I know you like.
I do. Well, you got to be careful of adjusted EBITDA. Everybody uses it. But, of course, we have to be aware of what it's adjusting for. And it may have the function, broadly speaking, of showing margins being more significant than they really are.
This is a regional to national story that did lose money last year that is coming on very aggressively. It did buy a lot of Zoe's Kitchens, which is
feel that this is such a key for the IPO market?
Because JP Morgan is going to let this thing pop in a way that's going to say, I got to get back into stocks. This is so exciting. Let me have the next one. This is how it all starts. A recognizable name of 4 million people who are part of the loyalty plan. It's healthy-ish. It is loved. I don't know if you've been to the one down here.
I have.
But good luck. The line is out the door.
That depends on the day.
But, yeah, not Mondays.
Or Fridays.
Right, but that's because of that work-from-home nonsense you keep talking about. And I think that it's going to be very hard to value because they are losing money. Let's say annualize the company's first quarter adjusted EBITDA of $6.7 million, David, to get a 2023
EBITDA.
Look
at all those people.
You get, well, that's they're people who work there.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Chipotle has a market cap of $56.5 billion, but.
Yeah, well, Cava's never going to get anywhere near that.
No, but
your lifetime.
The IPO is going to be hot, hot, hot. It's going to change. The public is going to listen to what happened to Cava, and the public is going to be in. And, David, all I can tell you is this is going to be one that the home gamers want to be in.
I am, as I've been consistently, I'm not convinced that you're right on
your
that
skepticism
one.
Skepticism.
I am on opening
AI,
the IPO market. Not specific to the Cava IPO. Simply that it is going to really open up the IPO market. We'll see.
Oh.
You've been right many times. In fact, when I disagree with you, most of the time I end up being wrong.
Well, that's...
I don't like to admit that.
That's very positive for you.
It depends. All right, after the break, we're going to get some breaking economic data. I just said, right?
I appreciate that. Thank you, Bill.
Plus, later this hour, don't miss the CEO. Yes.
Oh.
She watches. She loves... She's her biggest fan.
She knows I actually like him. My father thought we hated each other.
We got a look at futures for you. We got about 17 minutes before we get started with an opening bell. We're back right for this.
Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to fight rising costs of inflation or pay off your debt or anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, can help. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been helping great investors like you. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking for tips, Yahoo Finance makes it super easy by putting all the tools and data you need in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and more. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. That's how Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you take a look at your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective is what great investors need. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back to Squawk on the Street. Rick Santelli here live at CME HQ with breaking news. Industrial production capacity utilization for the month of May. On production, expecting up 0.1%, but not meant to be, down 0.2%. Down 0.2%, that is the weakest number of the year. You have to go back to December to find another negative number, and that was negative 1.55. On utilization rates, about as expected, 79.6. And depending on how you round the number, that just about equals January, where we were 79.597. We see interest rates, 10-year note yields at 3.74 are down 4 basis points on the low yield, high price of the session. Squawk on the Street will return after a short break.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
All right, it's 9:20, not quite 9:20, but about 10 minutes before we get started here on the East Coast, at least, with an opening bell. We have time for a mad dash. We can even stand up for it.
It's a very interesting note from Morgan Stanley today. T-Mobile's been going down. And a lot of it is people believe that this Dish-Amazon alliance that I know you have questioned, they say today, breaking through to 150, obviously 129, patients should be awarded reinstating as top pick from Morgan Stanley. David, they've got this $14 billion buyback. They think that it could be very active. They're modestly increasing their estimates. But David, here's what I mentioned this for. Can you imagine AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile? If T-Mobile chooses to cut, to make it so that like give a pro visual way, if they, you know, the new Apple device,
yes.
If they make it so that they have a more competitive offering right now, they do not, than Verizon. For the 14, David, can anyone really be in a price war with a company that is as lucrative as T-Mobile?
Well, they have a very strong network in 5G.
Yes.
And, you know, I think it's harder for Verizon to make the claims that it did for many years, yes, and gave it the dominance that it had for a period of time. That said, this is all about competition,
yes,
really.
Yes, it is.
Whether you want to say Amazon or whatnot may actually happen there. But from the cable companies,
this is
competition.
That's why I like the Morgan Stanley piece, because it basically says, okay, line in the sand, it's not going lower, it's bouncing. Now, you and I both know Mike Siebert. Mike Siebert, even though he wears those T-Mobile sweaters that have that magenta thing, he is a vicious competitor. He is like a, you know, a velvet fist, because
he's so nice.
And I think he's tired of the stock being.
Well, listen, if we put up the others, Verizon and AT&T are also down. It's been a bad year to own these.
7.5.
By the way, if you go to any length other than a year, you'll see that the stock is far outperformed.
I think that this is an amazing call to line in the sand and Simon Flannery, whom I have liked for so long, he's a terrific analyst.
Yeah.
This is a good call.
He's okay. And Flannery's been doing it a long time.
You know Simon.
I do.
Remember Quest? He was named Quest.
Joe Nachio. All right, we got an opening bell. What do we got? About 8.5 minutes from now. Quick programming note as well. It isn't too late to sign up for CNBC's Financial Advisors Summit. We're going to have some of the street's top investors and market experts break down where they see risk and reward ahead. You can scan that QR code to register. Visit cnbcevents.com/financialadvisor for more. We're back right after this.
I see AI presenting transformational opportunities. I've talked about how the collapse of productivity has been an essential issue in the global economies, and I believe it is an essential reason why we have such sticky inflation. I believe that AI has a huge potential to increase productivity, increase knowledge base, transforms margins across sectors. It may be the technology that can bring down the inflation.
That was Larry Fink predicting, of course, that AI at least is presenting what he said is transformative opportunities that will have significant impact on productivity in a positive way, Jim. You know, not the only one, of course. We've had Jan Hatzius here, you know, the whole team over there at Goldman months ago put out a report talking about GDP going up by, I think it was, 1.5 percentage points over time as a result of productivity gains.
it's tough. I mean, I know that Jensen Huang, whom everyone is the 7 trillion club, NVIDIA, he's just talking about the biggest thing that we do in an economy worldwide, the biggest total addressable market, is the building of factories. And he's saying that the building of factories is going to be come down dramatically in price and be able to build them fast because you'll do a digital twin.
You can do, right, which is a tiny little, what it is, but right. You'll be able to look at everything
right.
and then create efficiencies from what's working or not right. working on your digital right. representation.
Now, I have Adobe on tonight, and they actually have figured out some of the great productivity. It's really rather amazing. Larry Fink's right. If you wanted to make a dress and change a pattern, that normally would take 2 weeks. You can do that in hours now.
Yeah, but I mean, it's also a lot of work in the office as well that is being dramatically improved, or at least I should say the amount of time needed is being cut dramatically right. as a result of the use of generative AI.
And Salesforce has calculated to be that you get 5 additional hours of work out of an employee per week, which, again, now that is, say, on a 50-hour week.
It's still 10%. You know, that's not bad.
And so that's productivity. It's just not interesting productivity to people because it's business to business. You don't see it. But that's where I bet you bank. If we had Brian Moynihan on here, I think he would say, you know what, I'm going to be getting a lot more out of my people. RBC is saying that right now.
Yeah.
Gucci's saying that right now.
You know, something we haven't talked a lot about at all, we did for a while, was the use of 5G in the enterprise at the edge because of the computing power. But that's starting to come around, too.
Yes.
That's something, you know, a usage case for 5G that hasn't appeared in full as yet. But at least, you know, if you talk to enough people now, say it's starting to get closer.
Right, that's interesting because that's not NVIDIA's
bailiwick. HP Inc., for example, where you can bring enormous amounts of computing power as a result of wireless technology right to the edge of the network and therefore do things in a factory or a manufacturing plant in a real-time basis that you couldn't previously.
Right, and I think that, again, people can't see it. I mean, one of the things that Jensen talks about is that things will be moving on robots. They won't be using forklifts anymore. Well, what does that do? It makes the economy a little bit faster. It also cuts down pollution. By the way, you know, Jensen was more interested in waste and cutting down waste than he is on anything else. But that is inherently productive. And do I think Larry Fink's wrong? I think trying to figure out how much is a fool's game right now. Too early.
Too early.
Yeah. Even, you know, like, great people like Jim Breyer, I think, would say it's too early from Excel. But he thinks it's going to be monumental.
He does. And obviously, we've talked a bit about what it's going to mean in healthcare, for example. And I think people like Jim Breyer are thinking a lot about the opportunities there.
Yes, he is.
From an investment standpoint as well, for new and emerging companies that can use and incorporate generative AI in what they do to greatly increase healthcare outcomes.
Yeah, and we have to distinguish this from, like, the letters that you send, the lawyer letter with the 4 wrong cases. I mean, that's not it.
No.
What it is that when you call to when you go to a website, they will direct you to the right person. That's right. I hear things here.
You can hear the applause starting here. It's going to get very loud, of course. We're surrounded by many of the people who are here to celebrate the IPO of Kava. It is one of the bigger ones we've had in quite some time, certainly at the New York Stock Exchange, with a lot of attention being focused on this Mediterranean fast casual that is going, as Jim said, from a regional more to a national player. Certainly plans to use some of the proceeds from this IPO to help fuel that growth phase that it hopes to enter. But a lot of doubters too, Jim. In terms of profitability, in terms of future cash flows and their ability to actually garner them.
Absolutely. Now, 263 locations across 22 states and Washington, D.C. 82% are in the suburbs. That's very interesting because, you know, that's a little bit wealthier. And I know that they could show profit if they want to. That's interesting.
Like many growth companies, of course, they're choosing not to. Jim said if they could show profitability, they're investing for future growth. There was the opening bell. This is the celebration here at the New York Stock Exchange. Again, Kava. We're going to talk to the company's CEO in just a bit, a few minutes. Over at the NASDAQ, by the way, it was Fifth Third Bancorp celebrating the
165th
anniversary of that bank.
Almost every single regional bank has had its numbers cut of late, and a lot of them are saying it's really hard to get a loan. And yet, there's Powell saying, look, the growth is still happening. David, this incredible dichotomy that you're seeing between the banks that are saying, look, it's getting tougher and tougher to get a loan, and the fact that the Fed says things are still too easy. It's really an amazingly difficult time to figure out what to do. So people default to fast-growing technology.
So they default to buying Apple, or they're buying Tesla, although they're not buying it today.
Even though there's some very positive.
Or they default to buying NVIDIA, or Amazon, or Microsoft, or Alphabet. That's about it.
Yeah, well, right? They're down today. David,
yeah, they're all down today. A lot of them are down today.
Are you concerned at all about the different lawsuits filed against Google from the EU and from Jonathan Cantor?
Well, you've done more work on this than I have, because I know you've read all the complaints, the DOJ one in particular, about having to split the ad business. And to your point, the EU is potentially embarking on a similar action. And so they got a lot of fronts in this war that they're going to be engaged with for quite some time.
Right. And I would say that this is unlike any other challenge to Alphabet. There's a very serious, rigorous challenge about you maybe should pick one side or the other, rather than the buy side or the sell side. Now, in their defense, Alphabet's saying, listen, everybody gets a bargain. There's lots of different competitors. You don't need to use us. I understand both sides.
Yeah.
But I think that people... most of these lawsuits, people say they drag on too long, it doesn't matter. That's not Jonathan Cantor's goal.
Yeah.
He wants quick resolution. He wants them to, that would dramatically lower their profitability. I think that Mr. Cantor is very good at his job. He used to be at Paul Weiss, he's a corporate lawyer. This is not FTC, okay? However, Alphabet also has some compelling things to say on its side. This case and the case that Merck has filed against Medicare are two cases that people aren't talking about nearly enough versus what's going
to
happen.
We'll have time to talk about them, but I'm glad you did bring them up because they are important, of course. And it is important to point out, by the way, when it comes to Alphabet, it was the last administration also, Bill Barr also brought an action too. I mean, the DOJ, you know, it doesn't, this one does not fall under the broader theme of what are these guys doing on the antitrust front.
Right.
This is more,
it's kind of cut and dried. And if you listen to Jeff Green, he would tell you, look, it's which side are you on? It's kind of like Harlan County.
Yeah. Speaking of trials, I got to tell you about the one that's really stirring up the M&A world. Microsoft is going to go head to head with the FTC in federal court.
Well, someone
in
had
a
to.
Week.
Someone had to.
In but Jim.
A week?
A
How
week.
They had a judge to do that?
Oh. Judge Corley, it is something that at least people have been doing this a long time, like myself, and covering it.
It's unbelievable.
Those who've been obviously participants in these markets have never seen, which is we're going to trial next week, a 5-day trial.
Are you going to go out?
I don't know that I am going to go there.
Can I suggest that you go? I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I know. I've thought about it.
No, this is going to be, this is the test case of the renegade runaway rogue FTC, and it really is interesting. You got to go.
By the way, usually we talk about the limitless resources of the U.S. government.
Right.
In this case, Microsoft may have the beat on that because
right.
I don't think the FTC ever expected they'd have to go to court.
No, Microsoft has to. They have more unlimited
to
firepower
bring the
than
case.
FTC.
And Microsoft.
Who are they using? Do you know who they're using?
They're using everybody.
Okay.
I mean, my God, they could put 500 lawyers to work on this thing, and they're going to have to because they've got days. They're taking depositions. Now, maybe there was some preparation underway for the ALJ, for the administrative law judge hearing that's taking place in August. But this is it. This will decide from the U.S. perspective whether Microsoft is violating antitrust law and trying to buy Activision. So, important case.
This
that
could be the
said,
twilight of the FTC idol.
Yes, this could be very important for the FTC in terms of the continued cases that they are bringing.
That's incredible.
And, you know, whether they're going to continue to be able to chill the waters of M&A.
Please describe to people what typically would happen, how long this would be drawn out and how...
You were not expected to have a trial until the fall, most likely, and then this thing could go into March. I mean, who knows? That said, we'll take you back to the UK to remind you that when it comes to this deal, $95 a share in cash, so you can still see there is a significant spread, as we say, to that price. It is still the appeals process that Microsoft has undertaken for the CMA, the UK antitrust regulator's decision to block the deal, to prevent it. And this that is still thought to be a very significant hurdle for Microsoft. Perhaps not one that is unbridgeable, but a difficult one nonetheless, Jim. So as important as this case will be next week and the week following, it's 5 days they're giving it, don't forget that when it comes to the success of the deal, the ability to close the transaction, Microsoft still has to win in this against this tribunal in the UK,
yeah. I know, that's
which
really
sends it back to the CMA if they were to win, and then the CMA has to change its opinion. So it's still a very high.
All right, let me give you a more positive scenario than all that. Retailers.
Retailers.
Kohl's recommended by Cowen. Very, very good piece. This is Tom Kingsbury. He's, you know, used to run Burlington. He's a very different manager from Kohl's. Target yesterday, people did not talk enough about how Brian Cornell was very upbeat when he spoke about Target. That's now the second day that it's up. When you have both Kohl's and Target up, people are going to go buy Walmart. Costco is saying some very good things. So I think that the big retailers, Home Depot, of course, kept its outlook the same, but the big retailers are talking very positive. Bad for the Fed, good for the stock market.
Well, all right, and Target is up again now
after
numerous consecutive days down. Just the stock was reeling in part because of that shrinkage number they gave us, in part because of this boycott, because they got themselves embroiled in the culture wars, unclear that they really had. I don't even want to talk. You know,
I felt that Brian handled himself very well in terms of just saying universally, look, we have always been in favor, worked hard to embrace everyone.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of the American way, even if people think it isn't the American way.
And then there's this rumor, which I have not been able to confirm whatsoever, that there'd be some activists in the stock.
I've heard that.
What's the plan? What are you going to do?
They have no plan.
Yeah. No plan.
I mean, look, it's a great company, and it actually had sales were slowing. Regardless of what you thought, sales were slowing. But I now feel it's overdone, and I think people should recognize that it's overdone.
Speaking of
Diageo,
a little bit of a different. No, Kroger reported, right? You got any take on the Kroger quarter?
Yeah, I mean, look, Kroger's right back in that smack in that the takeover world.
Yeah, they
the
are.
Kroger numbers are fine.
Right. I mean, the purchase Albertsons, what they're trying to accomplish
talking about
there.
A deal that will not get done.
Yeah. That one, again,
when everybody's
you have to differentiate sometimes between these cases in the sense of, all right, that one would have been brought under any administration, right. Most likely. Amgen Horizon, nobody thinks that there was another administration that would have brought
okay.
a case on that
now,
one.
Now, I'm not sure whether Rodney McMullen, who's the CEO, has told me point blank, look, we will do what's necessary to close it, including, say, spin-off companies.
Yes,
spin-off.
Yes. They had made a lot of overtures in terms of divestitures they're willing to do.
Right, but DOJ has said over and over again, those deals have failed.
They don't work.
They
don't work.
Because the company tends to go out of business.
Right. It's no good if you divest something that then goes bankrupt.
People should Google Hagen if you're concerned about what can go wrong. That's an outfit that got a bunch of stores from Safeway. And then within a few months, they went under and Safeway took over the stores again. So just beware that there are very big obstacles to that deal.
Yeah.
Very big.
Tesla shares have finally reversed what was that 13-day, was it 13? I believe it was. Up streak. Yesterday down, again today down. I mean, not much more to say about it other than that, but
no.
It was notable, of course. Tesla stock still up well over 100%, flirting right around that $800 billion market value for the company.
David, did you find
I think Jonas had some things to say. What is he paid by the word, that guy? Every day.
I used to be paid by the word. It's kind of an interesting function. You tend to write
You're
a
not
lot.
Still paid by the word? The word that you say?
Because
you'd be the highest paid man in America.
I had my larynx looked at because I was overpaid. David, you know, here's something that's amazing. Oracle can come out, Larry Ellison, and say we're taking a huge share from everybody, and nobody reacts the first day. But Amazon's down today. And I think people should recognize that some of that is indeed Oracle taking share.
I think so.
I really do.
Really?
I've been doing some work with other companies that are involved with web services.
Oracle's
taking share. Larry Ellison is not just saying stuff to make his point. He's just very on fire. So is Safra-Katz. That Oracle quarter matters. But David, matters more than Kava.
All right. Speaking of Kava, we're going to get to that. Let's give you a quick bond report as well before we head to a break. Treasuries this morning, we had hit, what were we, 4.77 on the tier. Where are we now, though, right? You said, Jim, you'd mentioned there was a...
No, the longer end is really doing
things
well.
Things kind of reversed a bit.
There it is. You're getting much lower interest.
Prices higher there. 4.66 is where we stand right now.
What an exciting day.
Say again?
It's a very exciting day.
It's an exciting day. In part because, of course, we do have this IPO, and the CEO of Cobble will join us shortly.
The IPO market is about to come alive for the first time since maybe Uber.
You remember Frampton Comes Alive? Remember that album?
Frampton was involved with the American Brain Foundation.
Oh, didn't know that. We're back after this. Fast casual eatery Cava is making its market debut right here at the New York Stock Exchange. $22 a share is where the IPO priced. We'll keep an eye on it. Of course, Bob Fasani will be tracking it as well when we get closer to an actual open for you of that stock. The CEO, though, is going to join us at Post 9. That'll be a first on CNBC right after this break.
David, happy Cava Day.
Thank you.
Cava is set to go public here at the Stock Exchange this morning. It's very exciting. Priced at $22 a share, it will probably open much higher than that. We have CEO Brett Schulman joining us now. Brett, first, congratulations on all your success.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, David. Thanks for having us.
Now, I think that your story is one that I want people to know. It's an actual, authentic story from three people who are great cooks, and you join. And I want you to just tell America what has happened with your story. It is that clip.
Yeah, our brand was founded by three childhood friends, sons of Greek immigrants, Ted, Ike, and Dimitri, Chef Dimitri, really to bring their modern American spin on their family's heritage and culinary. And we do that through our mission to bring heart, health, and humanity to food. And I was introduced to the guys back when they had two full-service restaurants and sold their dips and spreads in a couple local Whole Foods markets. And we hit it off. They said, come on board, be our fourth partner. And we talked about, we need to bring this great food, this unique cuisine, where taste and health unite without compromise, to a larger audience. So we worked and we co-founded our fast casual restaurant, Cava, as you know it today, and operate in over 22 states and have over 263 restaurants across the country.
Okay, so let me ask, you've got a great average unit volume, north of 2.5 million, which is very good. But I think a natural, more critical person might say, you're not making money yet, so why not?
Yeah, so when you think about it, we've got this amazing white space opportunity in Mediterranean. We have a clear dominant leadership position defining the category, and we've created a powerful unit economic engine. Our restaurant level profit margins are strong. Our increase in restaurant level dollars, $50 million in the first quarter alone, over $91 million all of last year. Restaurant level profit is the oxygen, the lifeblood of our business. And then we've invested in significant, robust infrastructure over the years. So as we grow and move forward, we'll be able to leverage that infrastructure. And we get a really attractive cash on cash returns on all these investments in the new restaurants we're building. And you're seeing that momentum build in the business.
I mean, because that ends up being the concern, at least of some, which say, hey, you've had very impressive revenue growth, but they do wonder about ultimate profitability. Yeah. You seem to be indicating that if you were to stop investing right now on the restaurant level, you're already profitable. Mm-hmm. But what do you tell people when they look out in terms of how much you're spending, what you're going to use, and the resources you're garnering today from the IPO, and when that day comes that you actually will be overall as a company profitable?
Well, we made significant investments in the Zoe's Kitchen acquisition. We converted that and transformed that acquisition, and you're seeing the momentum come out of that, where our net income from last year in Q1 alone went from a $20 million loss to a $2 million loss. So again, you're seeing the inflection point in the business, and all of that robust infrastructure we've invested in, the new restaurant growth, starting to take hold and drive real tailwinds to the business.
But you're still talking about years before you're profitable.
No.
No, if you simply look at the restaurant level profitability, you look at our cost structure, you can have line of sight to it.
What's line of sight? Am I talking a year, 2 years, 5 years?
Look, you have the restaurant level
Wait,
profit margin.
Let him answer the question.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You can see line of sight. You can read the S1. You can read our numbers. Yeah. So we're incredibly excited about it. We've got a great path forward. We see this working and proven portability, no matter whether we're in the suburbs or the cities, whether we're in Bryant Park here in Manhattan, or Back Bay in Boston, or Fayetteville, North Carolina, or Fayetteville, Arkansas. We're seeing consistent results. And I think that's the other thing that's exciting. When you look at our average unit volumes, it's not just one region of the country that's successful. It's all regions we operate in. And that gives us the confidence that, that is coming
The line of sight
the
is
the line of
is
sight.
There.
By the way, yes. David, they do break down the regions. So this is a very transparent company. And on the profit margin per store, the profit, the margin, the actual restaurant level profit margin, which is a very good indicator, they are, the last one was 25.4%. Now, Chipotle is 23.9%. So the comparisons, a lot of people are comparing you to Sweetgreen, which is a fizzler, and some are comparing you to Chipotle, which is long-term. I want to ask you, where is America in terms of Greek food versus where it was, say, 5-10 years ago?
Yeah, that's the incredible thing. When you look at the demographic shifts in our country and the trends, 48% of Gen Z identify with an ethnic minority group. That's up from 38% of millennials. Gen Alpha will be the first generation across that 50% paradigm. And what we know is, as the country gets more diverse, people are seeking bolder, more interesting flavors, seeking the new cultural cuisine beyond the mature cultural cuisines of Mexican, Asian, and Italian. And that's where Mediterranean comes in. And then you match it with the shifting health perceptions, where people want to eat better, but they don't want to have to make compromises doing it. And that's where our unique cuisine, where taste and health unite, come in. And then it appeals to so many people, whether you're a vegan, vegetarian, you want to eliminate lactose or gluten, or you want to eliminate garlic, Jim. I heard.
Yeah, I know. That's going to be impossible.
Our culinary team has made a garlic-free creamer bowl for you today.
The creamer bowl?
The creamer bowl.
The creamer bowl is...
And that's
you already had it. You really didn't need to do that.
That's unbelievable.
He's already obviously
I got to get him in.
Now you're giving him his own bowl.
I can't even get into your restaurant down here. The line is so long. You're telling me I
got
to
get you in line.
And I get a Kramer bowl.
We got to get you in line. So the point is, like,
it is exciting. The place is very exciting.
We've got 38 items on the line that you can make over 17.4 billion combinations, and what that leads to is an incredibly diverse customer base, which leads to that incredibly diverse portability, which generates that powerful economic engine, which will address what you talked about
and earlier. And what is the primary use of the proceeds from this IPO?
To build new restaurants and bring this to the 26 states in the continental U.S. we don't operate in today and grow in the markets that
but
we do operate in.
Promise me you will not do willy-nilly growth. Promise me you will not cave to Wall Street and put up 200 stores next year.
We've put a very reasonable plan out for a growth rate because we agree with you. We think the same thing. We want to make sure that the growth is measured and we maintain this excellent quality we've been able to deliver the last 12 years.
Now, when your discussions with the bank, JP Morgan, did you discuss as the price moved up that there really is a possibility you could do this at $30, $40? Obviously, big institutions went in and individuals. How do you think you came to that $22 number?
It's a reflection of how we've thought throughout our journey, how our investor partners and our board, as we were a private company, think, and that's long term. We want to build this for the next 10 years, not the next 10 months. This isn't a destination. It's not a moment in time we're trying to maximize. We're trying to build this for the long term.
In the near term, dealing with things such as food costs and inflation, not to mention obviously wage costs, how have you navigated that? And have any of those sort of started to get better?
Yeah, so I think that goes back to my point about the infrastructure we've invested in over the years that we're beginning to see the leverage from. We have a direct source supply chain with scalable producers where we control a lot of our inbound freight and logistics. So as we grow in markets, we move from LTL pallet pricing to half truckload to truckload, getting freight savings as well as economies of scale with our providers. And we're vertically integrated. We have manufacturing facilities where we produce all of our dips and spreads. So that allows us very efficient, cost-effective production of our high-quality ingredients that we're not having to produce and have the complexity within the four walls of our restaurant. And what that allowed us to do is take less than 5% in-restaurant pricing last year while expanding restaurant-level margins and really driving that value proposition for our guests.
You know, a number of people, I mean, Jim mentioned Sweetgreen, which is right down the street from Kava here. People can remember when that company went public as well. Yes. Telling a similarly strong story in terms of sourcing a lot of things. It hasn't gone that well, at least as a stock. How do you differentiate yourself from that?
Yeah, I'd say look at our restaurant level margins and how strong and robust they are, and look at our proven portability. We're 82% suburban in our portfolio. We've been over 80% throughout our history. As I mentioned, we're in small markets like Lynchburg, Virginia, and Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and we're in Westwood in Los Angeles. So the incredible diversity that we see this resonate. And as Jim pointed out in the S1, the consistency of that performance in all regions of the country, I think really shows the difference with CAVA.
And hence why I've been saying, I know, David, I've been going on and on about it, why this deal is so important. It's going to be very exciting. And I know that's a word that is loaded because we want people to do all the homework. But if you do the homework and the transparency of this company, this is the way that Chipotle started. And Chipotle is one of the greatest restaurant chains on earth.
That's high praise. It's a great company.
I have to,
and
Brett, I
appreciate
have to.
Being included in that category.
You just have too many good things going for you, including the make line. You do a very
Thanks
good job.
Thanks for good luck today.
Brett, thank you so
well,
much.
The debut is getting close, 29 to 31. Looks to be at least the latest indications.
So. And a Kramer bowl to boot without the garlic that makes you upset.
David,
nice.
We'll have to figure out your David favorite bowl.
Yeah, I know.
David doesn't like anything except thin gruel.
It'll be very cranky, whatever that bowl is.
We don't want you to be hangry.
You're terrific.
What do you got tonight on the show?
Okay, I have Adobe, and Adobe is probably the best use case for AI and how much productivity there is and how much money can be made. Shantanu Narayen, I cannot wait. He's terrific.
Okay. Thank you. Jim, thank you.
And thank you.
Shantanu, again, the guest tonight on Mad. We'll be back right after this.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
All opinions expressed by the Squawk on the Street participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information Squawk on the Street participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Squawk on the Street disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Squawk on the Street disclaimer.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.